And welcome to Deadpan number 142. Kind of like the final Harry Potter film, this is actually the final installment of The Flash in the Pan. However, this one will be broken into two parts. Unlike the Harry Potter film, it's not because it's going to make double the profits. It's just going to work out better that way. Trust me, you'll see. So in this episode and the next one, they will each contain about 20 minutes of my conversation with T. Morris about Flash Gordon. And you can hear that there were tons of tangents. So it was a lot of fun conversation. I laughed my ass off while I was listening to it. So I encourage you to listen to both episodes. As I sit here before this microphone, I think the second one will come out in less time than a week. But that remains to be seen. As of this moment, keyword click. Anyway, I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Buster Brown, Crab, Keaton, Bunny, Douglas. And while we're on the topic, you know, something occurred to me while vacuuming. Ghostbusters came out and became a cultural reference in 1984. What would the Dustbuster have been called if it had hit the market sometime in the 70s? All right, and also, as of this recording, we actually have 897 comments on the comments page, so we'd set a goal of 500 and damn near doubled it. And, you know, I certainly hope, just for the sake of round numbers, we'll get three more before I'm done with this process here, so we can be over 900. I won't set a comment goal for the week, I'll just give everyone a big pat on the back. And finally, in addition to the conversation with T. Morris, this episode will contain your usual dosage of randomly selected comments off the comments page for greasy spoon comments. However, they will be interspersed throughout. They won't be read all as one big chunk. And we'll try some effects on them for fun. We might have some wah-wah comments tonight. And all right, that's all. No more intro babble. Let's actually run Emery and Rich's promo properly, as opposed to last week, where we had an avant-garde 2.5 minutes of silence. And then let's get straight to the T. Morris audio. Again, my immense gratitude to T. Morris for supplying his insights and wit, and just for generally having a fun time talking about Flash Gordon. And I will come back for brief outro babble after all that's done, and I'm going to click stop now to end this intro babble, because it's just simply going on for far.
You've heard the vampire's cry. You've witnessed their struggle for freedom.
Don't. No, I can't possibly.
Please help me. Now, own the print version of Night's Nights by Emery and Rich. You've aged 20 years in a night. Yes, father, and you have not.
You are from hell!
Stop your coach or die!
No! No! Stay away! Stay away!
Greetings. I am Emery and Rich, author of Night's Nights. Don't miss the chance to meet me Friday, October 30th, 7 p.m., at Bay Books in Concord, California. Dress as your favorite vampire, trick or treat, and win prizes such as free books, character sketches, and Night's Night's dog tags. I can't wait to meet some of you biters in person. Don't live in Northern California and can't make it to the party? Well, simply show your support for Jesper, Julian, Severina, Markham, and the gang by purchasing Night's Nights on October 30th at Amazon.com. Let's show all those publishers what biters really want.
Strong words for a little girl who's about to get burnt into oblivion.
This is a battle you will not win.
You know not what you speak of.
Bring it on.
For more information, go to emsbox.com. That's emsbox.com. And don't forget, mark October 30th as your day to buy Night's Nights, either in person from me or at Amazon.com.
Don't miss being part of the next vampire revolution.
This vampire stuff kicks ass. Run, baby, run, run,
go and get your gun. 1, 2, 3. Vampires all their fucking way!
You know, the first place I saw Timothy Dalton was, you know, Flash Gordon. And since then, you know, he's been in, you know, he was in a couple of Bond films that I really enjoyed. I liked his take on James Bond. I really did. And then there was, he was in a really fun movie called The Rocketeer. And he was great in The Rocketeer. And so you've got all these great things going for that. Just so long as you can get past Sam Jones and Melody Anderson, it's a fun movie. It's a fun movie.
The Queen soundtrack is really truly fantastic. It really adds so much to the battle scenes, and I think the first time you really get a good taste of Queen again, 20 minutes of nonsense and crap, and then Ming shows up, and there's this really kind of deep, ominous, heavily distorted guitar note. I believe it's a guitar note or synthesizer note, you know, just to signal Ming's entrance. And you're just like, and finally you kind of snap out of your coma and you go, oh my God, this could be fun. And of course, and then, you know, Ming's daughter shows up and you, by the end of the movie, you kind of feel that Flash has made the wrong decision. He's made the wrong choice.
But in a weird way, you're kind of like happy because, well, you know, yeah, maybe Flash made the wrong choice, but I was pulling for Prince Baron anyway, and he's gonna get Princess Arla, so yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, that is true, right? And actually, right, Sam Jones is so dislikable that you're happy that
Yeah, I mean, he does come across a little wooden, but again, I think part of the charm of Flash Gordon, particularly by the time you're closing in on the big finale, you just don't care. You know, you're like, okay, Sam Jones is mildly entertaining. Melody Anderson, she is the human break of this movie, but I have invested so much time at this point, I'm okay with it. In fact, I'm actually enjoying it a bit. And just for that great moment when, you know, Flash is the last man on the ship, and he has to pilot it in, and that one blast takes out the window, so he's shielding his eyes, and he's surrounded by fire, and you've got Queen's music in the background, and you're just like, I am so in the zone right now. It's great.
Why, sure. Why, climb, sure. Into my spoon. Climb into my spoon.
John Blow says, quote, "There's nothing available to you in this view of Love, Long, and Prosper's archive," close quote. Just a Joe says, quote, "These are not the cute droids you are looking for," close quotes, dash, Jedi 404 trick.
No, I agree. By then, you absolutely have to be won over, I think, and I agree.
Oh, yeah.
You're having fun at that point, and it doesn't matter. So, you know, I'm kind of trashing the movie, and I think they're all of my complaints are justified. And actually, I have two more complaints that I'm going to file, but I will say,
I wouldn't say
yes.
You're trash in the movie. I mean, I'm not saying you're trash. I wouldn't say you're trash in the movie. I would say that you are being, you're being cruel to be kind, because as much as we've trashed, we haven't really trashed the movie. We've actually trashed its leads, but it's the support. Truly, this is a movie where the supporting cast was able to carry it. Which is why I think a lot of the supporting cast are still working.
Yes. And also they looked great. The costumes, in fact, you know, right now I'm wearing a plastic mask covered with gold chrome.
Oh, cause I'm wearing Ming's outfit right now.
Are you?
I've even got the ring, you know, unfortunately it's not working against little Serena. So,
okay. Yeah. I was going to say, so. I actually said that in the other, I would love to have that ring.
Oh, yeah, that ring gets you dates, bro. That ring gets you dates.
Well, no, I don't, you know, not for the date rape part of it, but, you know. but you know, everyone looked, but, all right, my complaint.
Sci-fi roofie.
That's right.
Anyway, that's
why,
you were saying.
That's why he grabbed it back at the end. He didn't want to
have
another empire. He just wanted to hook up.
Exactly.
But my two major complaints, well, first of all, not only do you have terrible Well, terrible lead actors. Also, their dialogue was absolute shit. It was absolute. They had some of the worst dialogue and some of the most, you know, some of the most groan-inducing lines to deliver. Which, and the you know, you can take someone who's a great actor who can deliver hokey lines, and you're still there. But you know, that's a combination that never works. You know, poor acting and just ridiculous dialogue. That's also another. You know, just some of the things they said. It's just you're just kind of putting your head. It's a facepalm moment. and also, you know, talking about the original serials, well, this is kind of a backhanded compliment to the movie. I like the fact that in the age of Star Wars and progressive special effects, that the special effects are terrible in Flash Gordon. I like that, actually. I think that's a good thing.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but I mean, when you look at just the retro, I mean, that's the other thing, though, about Flash Gordon is that it was very retro. I mean, just in the actual rocket ships themselves, I mean, they look straight out of the serials. And I think that was part, and the comic strips, let's not forget the comic strips. And I think that was an intentional choice.
Yes, the giant bulbous rocket ships, yeah.
The one that looks like a giant wasp, and, you know, things like that. I mean, yeah. You know, but visually, you know, for the 80s, no, it wasn't ILM. But I think that back in the 80s, I remember in the 80s, you either got Star Wars, you know, special effects, which I don't even think ILM became ILM until, was it what, and I think it was after Empire Strikes Back that ILM actually became ILM. Mm-hmm. But I think at that point in the 80s, we had two different kind of expectations. We said, okay, if it's made by Lucas or Spielberg, or if they're involved, then it's going to be really high-end special effects. If not, we get what we get, and we're happy.
Right.
I mean, really, I think that's the way it was. So when we knew this was Dino De Laurentiis, and I think fresh in, at least in my mind as a kid, I remember the cheesy special effects from the Dino De Laurentiis remake of King Kong.
Right.
So I kind of knew, okay, well, let's just suspend disbelief right there. but
actually, I didn't remember that the 76 King Kong with Jeff Bridges, I think.
Yep, Jeff Bridges and Jessica Lange.
Yeah, I didn't know that was De Laurentiis, actually. I had forgotten.
Why, sure! Why,
Lennon says, Ulysses, and I can't believe I just wrote that on bad review provided. Johnny Hull says, CP, sex is fun.
Deadpan is the motherfucking...
yeah.
But you know what, and actually, thank you for that segue, because that's perfect, because, yes, in the 80s, and of course that movie, we had the Harryhausen style of special effects, which is what... This Flash Gordon, you know, in the original one, they had mutilated, they had, like, these poor lizards with things glued to them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, those poor lizards.
Seriously, you know, the animal activity was not monitored on these films.
I don't think they were.
But, you know, that's what the new Flash, he needed to fight a giant Harryhausen, awful special effects, giant lizard or something. That was absolutely missing. That was lampooned in Amazon Women on the Moon, and you just needed him to have a ridiculous scene where he fights a giant monster.
Well, I think though that since we didn't have that, we still had, you know, we had like the quicksand scene or the quick swamp scene in this case. You know, we had a lot of those homages to the original to the original serials, but I think that. Visually, for what they were working with, they still pulled off a really beautiful-looking movie when they didn't do any outer space sequences. It was a beautiful movie to look at, in particular the court scenes, with all the different aliens and races and things like that. But but for the most part, you know, this was a throwback to the, you know, to those great serials and the canned dialogue and I, you know, the, like I said, the longer I watched it, the more I'm like, man, I'd completely forgotten how much fun I can have watching this movie. But now I will say, I think this type of movie becomes a cult, and this is sort of I think what's great to watch when you're watching Flash Gordon, it's almost a study in what makes a cult classic since we were talking earlier about Richard O'Brien, the Rocky Horror Picture Show was kind of like this. I mean, when you think about it, the supporting cast of the Rocky Horror Picture Show is absolutely just stellar. Yes. But the two leads, Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick, they just don't get it. I really didn't think that Barry Bostwick and Susan Sarandon got it, that they were parodying bad B-rated science fiction movies. See, everyone else did.
I thought they were appropriately square in that. I mean, this isn't the Rocky Palooza, but yeah, I thought that they were appropriately square.
Right. But when you look at the Rocky Horror Picture Show, they did not set out to be a cult classic, but they were trying to parody bad science fiction movies, and because you had those, in my opinion, those loose cogs, it becomes a cult classic because everyone else is so brilliant in the movie. You cannot say that Tim Curry is phenomenal in that movie. He is absolutely fantastic. Richard O'Brien is amazing in the movie. Meatloaf is great in that movie.
What's for dinner? Yeah.
Yeah, Meatloaf, get your fat ass off the table. But when you are Joe Q movie going public and you walk into this movie expecting really something really mind blowing and you walk out going, what the hell did I just see? That's why it's one of those movies that it doesn't do very well commercially at the box office, but then you go back and you watch it and you go, wow, this was delightfully goofy. Yes. And I think Flash Gordon falls in that same category.
I was just going to throw out another one like that. It's another movie that everyone has a strong opinion about from around the same exact era, maybe a year or two apart, was David Lynch's Dune. It's another one that looked great. Not all the Kyle MacLachlan wasn't a great Paul Atreides, but a lot of great supporting cast, a lot of great moments, a lot of great visuals.
And you know who else was in that? Max von Sydow. Max von Sydow was in Dune.
Yes,
he was in that version of Dune.
CJ says, agreed, NS. It's annoying when I find something for a great little price and the shipping costs twice as much as the product. Star, grumble, star. But I suppose someone's got to pay those guys in the tight delivery shorts. Ellipsis, winking smiley, parentheses, forgive me, ellipsis, I'm up too late, ellipsis, haven't slept in 4 days, ellipsis. And other stuff that makes me happy, ellipsis, silly, ellipsis. Yeah, ellipsis, close parentheses, la la la. Total WTF dress. And finally, Nomad Scry says, you missed a bunch of strapping young men jumping about in the woods for no reason other than to burn off some of that masculine energy. In other words, we made dick jokes. It was fun.
See, I would not call. There are exceptions to the rule. There are exceptions to that rule where of what makes a cult classic a cult classic. Dune, for example, I would not classify Dune as a cult classic because Dune does come across so heavy-handed. You can't really have fun in Dune. Mm-hmm. You just can't.
Right. And actually, the affection people have is for the book. People, the affection that people that you have for the 1980 Flash Gordon, and that lots of other that got it voted in, as our next Palooza victim, so to speak. I think, yeah, that's not there for Dune. So you're absolutely right, and the cult status.
Well, actually, since you brought it up, this is going to be my vote for the next Palooza.
You are listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan is a motherfucking wee. All rocks destroyed in the making of this bumper deserved it.
To me, here's an example of a cult classic movie that failed at the box office, but in my opinion should not have failed at the box office because, in my opinion, there's not one weak link in this chain. I think the next Palooza should be Buckaroo Palooza. We should be doing Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
That's a lot of fun.
Because not only is that movie fun, but if you watch it, you're just like, this is a really good movie. It is a clever, and I think the biggest problem with Buckaroo Banzai, it was way ahead of its time. It had the snark It has the snark of Firefly. It has that Joss Whedon snark, that Joss Whedon edge. And it's just, you know, for that snark when they're all sitting around and, you know, they go, he just says, remember something, wherever you go, there you are. I mean, just, there's some brilliant stuff in Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Yes, it's a very smart movie. And actually, this the eighth, as a kid watching that, you know, that was the first time I'd ever heard about the whole concept of the eighth dimension. And of course, the premise of the movie, which actually we're not doing the Buckaroo Palooza yet.
Buckaroo, yeah.
But yeah, the whole premise was very, very clever. I agree. It was very smart, very, very good. In some ways, so still dated now, but that's a good vote for the next time
yeah.
we go around.
Now, if we do a Buckaroo Palooza, if we do Buckaroo Palooza, then I will reserve my comments for what I think are some of the most incredible gems of all time in that movie. Just uber gems. But let's get back to Flash.
Yeah, enough about Peter. Let's get closing thoughts, I guess, on Flash.
Yeah, closing thoughts on Flash. Well, first off, since we were talking earlier about the soundtrack, you know, do I think it's Queen's best soundtrack? Absolutely not. But I think it's definitely the most atmospheric, and definitely the most appropriate about the Queen soundtrack for Flash Gordon is just how simple the theme is. Dun, 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 dun. You know, just that one note. Oh, and I'm thinking what happened was that Queen were just, they were so exhausted after coming up with this beautiful rock opera type of backdrop. They said, great, now we got to come up with a theme. And they're sitting there thinking, and, you know, and I can just see Freddie Mercury sitting there going, you know, just tapping his finger on the keyboard, and then suddenly going, Flash. And then Brian May kicks in Savior of the Universe, and then they just went with that, you know?
yeah, you know what, I would agree. I think the Highlander is their best
soundtrack. Out of all the stuff they've done, the Highlander soundtrack is their best. I mean, you got such wonderful songs that came out of there. And I hate to say this, more memorable songs from Highlander than from Flash Gordon. However, there's something about that soundtrack that was iconic in its simplicity. Because, you know, I mentioned on Twitter that I was talking about Flash Gordon or watching Flash Gordon. I got at least three tweets where someone tweeted to me, Flash, Savior of the Universe. Everybody remembers that. And they even tried to tie that in with the new Flash Gordon that was on Sci-Fi, and then they never played that theme. And I was like, oh, you fucking bastards. And my child just walked in right as I dropped the F-bombs.
Good
time, man. Yeah. Dad foul. Anyway.
Yeah, and I think you can't watch the movie, or at least I could not watch that movie without that song running through my head the whole time. And, waiting for the lines, you know, the lines that are in the song. It's just waiting for the moments from the song. Despite, you know, Gordon is alive, alive, alive. I couldn't.
Yes. I think the best song I think a lot of people don't hear is the last song called The Hero. And that's when you really get Queen unbridled. You know, you got Freddie Mercury wailing into the microphone. I mean, it's just great stuff. But the stuff that they produced for the movie, that's the pass. Cast and the music by Queen, I'm like, I'm going to go on ahead and I'm going to sit through these god-awful performances by these two no-name 80s actors because I've got some great supporting roles here and I've got music from Queen. I'm happy. I am happy. Almost as happy as getting these wonderful little scrolls from my child of different pictures, and they're all addressed to Dad. How cute. I just got to watch the F-bombs.
Now, did you watch that with her, or do you watch it? Or you think she's still?
Oh, no, she's
too scary.
No, no, she's way too young for the bulging out faces and the different blood of different coloring and stuff like that. You know, would I classify this as one of the great movies of the 80s? One of the great sci-fi movies to come out of the 80s? Oh, heck no. I mean, in some places, this movie's an absolute train wreck, and And visually, it is really hard to look at. And there are scenes where, like, for example, there is a scene where it is so over the top, you just got to roll your eyes and go, where the hell did that come from? I mean, Dale Art, she is able to disarm trained military guards of this palace and then figure out how this laser pistol works. And she is able to dodge fire by doing a somersault and then landing and taking two shots point blank range. I'm like, wow, what is she, like, ninja travel agent? And I'm like, you know, wow, I'd like to see her kick the crap out of Expedia's rates, you know. But it's
when you have pigs as your guards, that's what you get.
They
squealed and then smoked.
Yeah, but you know what they do look like? They actually reminded me more of those cartoon characters from Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Yeah, no, I
another possible one we could do, Wallapalooza, you know, yeah, Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Yeah, I've put that out there before, you know,
that's a heavy watch, though. That's heavy to watch. It's not like Repo Man, or it's not like Flash Gordon. That's like watching Dune. It's pretty heavy.
But there's also the great album, and of course we did the Watchmen book, which was just certainly
also heavy.
That's not very cheerful. Yeah.
True.
You tried to kill me! If I tried that, your head would be splattered all over this field. Now where's...
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
I was lying.
I said where...
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
I have the right for a lawyer.
Where...
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. First comment of the week was from Vanamond. He says, hey, hey, 16K. All right, in the next episode... Yeah. In the next episode, I will have the dramatic, exciting conclusion of the tangential conversation between T. Morris and myself, as well as a voicemail from Rapid Eye on the subject of Flash Gordon. And then I think Flash and the Pan will be officially done, there'll be no more Flashpalooza. Unless, of course, he or other Flash characters get voted into Duel of the Fates. I encourage you to go to the Deadpan website and find the post, which will link you to the SurveyMonkey site, where you can go and vote for which characters will be in the next Duel of the Fates tournament. There will be two divisions. One will be all characters from our Palooza films and materials we've covered, versus a division of all animated characters, because we are a bunch of fucking nerds. And it appears, at least as of this moment, that episode number 141 is going to finish up with 898 comments. Won't quite reach 900. And also, just so you know, next episode is number 143, so that will not be the one where I tell you why Huey Lewis is a fucking liar. That will come up in episode number 144. So stick around and stay tuned for the news about Huey Lewis. All right, well, thank you for listening to Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan is the motherfucking way, and there's episode 143 will be coming up soon, with all the stuff I described before. I'm not coming back after the music. Good night, Mush. If you want to send me content or any other ideas, the email address is sphericaljackm@gmail.com, or the voicemail line is 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664. Out. Thank you.
singing more.